where there were speakers, as you know, as all the rallies had speakers that had been planned. And all the speakers were people of color at in Portland, I believe, or the vast majority of them were. And before the scheduled start of the march, which was at 1:15, people started shouting, "Let us march," around 12:30. And I was standing relatively close to the stage. And these were shouts that were coming within kind of earshot of the stage. And so I was very surprised that marchers were not waiting, at least for the scheduled time. And, you know, and we saw this all the way in Washington, D.C., while many prominent women of color were speaking, like Angela Davis. This has been the one that has been making some of the news about why were people being disrupted. And, you know, it was very difficult. It was very difficult to watch the marchers shout, let us march, predominantly because I was standing in one area of the march, and so it's hard to tell because it was so massive. But I would like to say that the march was whiter than the demographic of Portland itself, and whiter, not wider, but whiter. So it was quite jarring as a person of color to watch all these crowds of white people telling people of color to be quiet because they just want to march.
Very representative of our everyday experience.
Yeah,
it felt
very Portland.
Very Portland, but I wasn't born here, but I've grown up here. I feel like I've earned my hoodie and my webbed feet. I've been here since 1985, thereabouts. And I thought that was very telltale. And I think we've all seen the photo ops, the Instagramming, the standing next to somebody of color with a Black Lives Matter sign, you know, things of that nature. And to say this, you know, and I've heard again and consistently from white people that these marches were representative of people of color, to which I say, A, you don't get to say that or define that because you don't experience racism. You do not get to decide that. B, we literally had reporters all over the place on the ground, an audio and video, and that will be uploaded and broadcast, showing white marchers telling people of color to be quiet. And it was incredibly painful to see that happen to Angela Davis, who they should be thanking and standing completely silent for the word civil rights today, along with so many others that were there. And I venture a guess they probably didn't even recognize her or know who she was. But
I really wondered. And in Angela Davis's speech, Angela talked about, she just mentioned some names of people, Free Leonard Peltier, you know, Liberation for Assata Shakur, and just all these names. And I couldn't help but wonder, too, like, how much does this group really understand what is being said to them? Because there wasn't quite as much cheering for those names as there was for, say, Scarlett Johansson, Ashley Judd, you know. And these people, I want to say, yeah, these white speakers had very profound things to say, but it was the audience reaction to me that was so noticeable. Just when you hear, say, like, Scarlett Johansson speaking, the audience is much, much quieter than when Angela Davis is speaking. And to me, that was something so shocking, because when I saw Angela Davis, I thought, oh my God, this is a
Angela
legend.
Davis.
This is a legend.
In the sun,
you know,
Davis. Right.
Yeah. So it was palpable, if you watch just the TV footage live from DC, it's
palpable. And I, you know, to have feedback from white marchers, or even just those who didn't go, but that have written in to me and to my friends and colleagues to say, well, it was representative because I saw groups of people of color, which just underlines their obtuseness, that is not a bona fide factual representation of a person of color's experience, that you were standing next to six people or 12 people or even 40 people. That is not representative of that culture's sum experience and ideas. Within each of our races and ethnicities are segments. It's very complex. And that is something that you don't get to know through an Instagram photo, a trip to DC, a safety pin, or a little knitted cap. That's just not how that works, because it's not a real experience. You wouldn't expect that, or, from a friend just a random friend, you know, like you walk up to somebody and put a button on them, and then all of a sudden you're going to move in together and you know everything about each other and respect each other. That is not how relationships work. And somehow in this race discussion, that's how it's being treated. That somehow, which to me is very profound, circling back to what is so Portland or what is so, you know, racist or derogatory about this whole scenario. Somehow when we start talking about race, the, you know, with the whitewashing, with the let's sweep it under the rug, the humanity is lost from it. I've even heard, you must be taking this personal, or they must be taking this personal, to which I reply, duh. Am I taking this personal? Because this is the sum of my existence and my brother's existence, my partner's existence, my colleague's existence from the day we were born. Yes, it is personal, because it is. You should be respectful of that, because you know nothing about that. And I know that can cause fragility, like it did. A lot of people chose not to fly in for the DC march when they were making even the smallest change, which was changing the board that was representing everybody, you know, but that's unfortunate, you know, that they felt that way. It doesn't mean that we're dividing. And I think that's where the term white fragility or fragility in general comes into mind, where it's like, you know, you have, but that's an opportunity for you to ask yourself, you know, why are you feeling so hurt?
Exactly.
You know? And yes, you are, you know, it's not a divisive, strategic device to keep you out, but you don't get to naturally just be somebody's best friend or be somebody's ally. And yes, that does hurt. We've all been there in kindergarten. We want it so bad to be, you know, like, I mean, and that's good that you, you know, you want to support or somebody wants to support, but that takes conscious time, conscious attention, being sensitive. And frankly, I think that's a word we need to reclaim. I think it gets underappreciated. That just means that you are using your eyes, ears, mouth, and heart, and that you're being not just acting on a feeling of being called, because I don't feel like that's a good enough reason to want to just be somebody's best friend or ally, but you are consciously, intentionally wanting to get to know them, you know, and their communities. But anyway, Caden's been so quiet. I'm going to stop talking for a minute. Jump in here, Caden. Get in here.
I am valuing the non-male, non-cis perspective. And so I want to make sure that I am not like over here, like talking over and like telling, trying to like claim that I have like the most valuable experience and presence, like, in these types of conversations. But I was at the march kind of almost on accident. I was intentionally there, but I was there for a different reason, and I decided kind of spur of the moment to just walk through the crowd. And I don't know, were you there, Charity?
I swim in the news, for those who haven't guessed already. And by the time Saturday came around, I just said, I can't. I'm glad that I didn't, because for me, I can take time to process, because I just have to make hard decisions in the moment. And by the time afternoon rolled around and I saw my feet, I actually just crashed into a state of depression, frankly, and then just had to do a lot of self-care and regather. But I was in communication with people throughout the weekend remotely.
I know you were there, Jenna, and I can't even imagine what it would have been like for you to be there. I'm like really glad that you decided not to go for your own sake, based on what you've told me. Jenna, I don't know how you stood that, because I was like,
I would like to applaud. I would like to applaud Jenna for that, and every one of our reporters who went to the different marches this weekend, for sure.
It was like straight up trauma for me to like walk through that. And I'm not saying that to like evoke pity. I was just like trying to like not be in tears, doing my best to keep everything together, like walking through this sea of people. And it just made me so profoundly sad to see how many people were targeting their efforts and had like the best of will, but were fundamentally asleep to the things that got Trump elected. And they are protesting in reaction to, you know, these symptoms of systemic problems, and not naming them. You know, we're not even at the point where we're naming them. And I'm like trying really, really hard to keep it positive But the more I
don't have to.
I know, but it's kind of like something that I like oblige myself to do, because that's the only way that I can move on and be kind to other people and not like create undue tensions and disagreements.
Well, talking about it being trauma, I will say that just from my own personal experience, to be open here, I have felt extremely stressed out since going to the march. I've had a lot. I actually haven't really, I think, processed a lot of stuff because I've just been really reactionary since. So just to share kind of one person experience, I did cry. I did cry when I, and it wasn't because I was afraid of what I was in, but when I showed up, I met my group at the Japanese American Plaza, which is down there by the waterfront. It's a tribute to the Japanese American internment, and my family was one of those families that went. And for me, it was just this really emotional moment, and I've been there many times, and I didn't know why I cried, but then I realized it was because of this contrast I saw. There was hundreds, if not thousands, of people walking down towards the Burnside Bridge, laughing and having fun and wearing these pink hats and just sort of, you know, not even noticing this place. And I just felt overwhelmed by the apathy. And just because it's, to me, it was just this really profound moment. I don't know, of just, wow, look at you smiling and walking by just like you did so many times in history. And this white woman was near me and was just sort of like, are you okay? And I honestly was just like, yes, please, somebody talk to me. I felt overwhelmed. But the way she comforted me was to talk to me about getting in tune with Asian energy. And I just wanted to be like, well, you know that there's no such thing as Asian energy because Asia is a massive continent. And this idea of chi that I know you are speaking of is very, very specific. But I'm just going to stand here and try not to yell at people. So within my first couple minutes of being in this quote unquote march, I was tokenized. And, you know, and I have to deal with these microaggressions that I deal with every day in this city. And it made me say, should I run away? Honestly, but I met up with my group, which was made up of Asian American women. We went to the stage and we experienced that, the let them speak, let us march. And we, being close to the stage, were screaming, let them speak, let them speak. And no one around us joined in on the chant, which to me was just, I mean, it was heartbreaking. It was absolutely heartbreaking to watch a crowd of white faces looking at us and then doing the most terrible thing. They smiled and gave us thumbs up in approval of our chanting instead of joining in. So that was my own personal experience, that it was heartbreaking to watch all these things that I actually had expected. I didn't feel in unity. I didn't feel in solidarity. And I didn't feel that the march was for me. I actually felt that my presence was there to actually disrupt this very white space.
I could definitely, that resonates with me a lot and other personal experiences that people have been letting our station and myself personally know about. It was painful to see how much fun it seemed that a lot of the white marchers were having.
And they took pictures with the police.
Without really realizing the source of the march going back to 97, the source of all of our marches, and yet, you know, having another march that was again hijacked pretty much. And then, you know, while they're marching, ignoring opportunities for knowledge. I wandered through that as I was also just feeling really heartbroken, seeing all these happy, you know, being connected to the reporters, being, you know, getting all this extra information in, which was emotional in itself, while making editorial decisions and trying to like be cool. I wondered how many of those flying in to DC, to Chicago, to Tokyo, to our town, how many of those white visitors had reached out to somebody, somebody of color, to ask them if there was something they needed, if there was a way that they could represent them at the march. I had probably one person in all the correspondence that we get incoming from the station or people querying me about the march, offer that. And I didn't hear that that happened in any of my friendship circles. I really wondered then for sure who this march was for.
I guess we're going to continue to ask that question in all the demonstrations coming up, but we are out of time. And so thank you, everybody, for the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Kanan. Thank you, Jenna.
We look forward to seeing what happens
we'll
on the
see
streets.
How this unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Cable Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Elle Kahn, Tom Flynn, Khalid Mosley, Kane Schlesinger, and Laura Klinkner. The producer is Jenny Okuyama. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is Wesley, the potentiometer Seiwei. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Charity Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jenna Yokoyama.
And I'm Kanan Schlesinger. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Gary Young speaks on the fear-mongering around gun rights and the young people that are caught in the crossfire. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Letters and Politics presents Georgetown sociology professor Michael Eric Dyson, who is visiting KBOO today to discuss his new book, Tears We Cannot Stop, A Sermon to White America. Mr. Dyson will perform a reading tonight at Powell's at 7:30, by the way. At 11, on stage and studio, D.M.A. Roberts speaks to the artistic director of Triangle Productions New York, Forever Dusty, a play about a famed singer, Dusty Springfield. And at 11:30, it's Art Focused. Andre Middleton presents Creative Women Making a Difference. He'll talk to Natalie Figueroa about YGB and previews Rene Lopez's solo show, Life Through My Lens. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not currently a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. That is the evening news. Good night, Jenna.
Night, Kane. Night, Charity.
Good night.
Good night, Wesley.
Good night, Wesley.
Good night.
Good night, Wesley.
Good night.